This episode of Forensic Forecast is brought to you by Digital Forensics Magazine at www.digitalforensicsmagazine.com and by contributions via listeners. Thank you all very much. Hello, this is Forensic Forecast. I'm Lee. No Simon, unfortunately. But it's not your average episode, this, today. We're not even going to give it a title or even an episode number. But what happened is that earlier last week, I spoke to Rob Lee, and we discussed several different things, including, you know, what's happening with Forensic Forecast and whatnot, but primarily about the SANS EU Forensic Summit, which is coming up April 19th and 20th later this year. So here's the interview. Hope you enjoy it, and we'll catch you again soon. Okay, everyone, like to please welcome back Rob Lee from SANS Forensics and Mandiant. How are you doing, Rob?
Hi, how are you doing, Lee?
Doing absolutely fantastic. Thanks for coming back. We obviously didn't scare you enough the first time.
Well, thank you for coming back. You were offline for a little bit. I was getting worried there. I saw your last post, and you know, what's going on?
Oh, just lots of stuff. Family, wife's pregnant, you're trying to sell the house, trying to move. Just work, busy.
So if I say we need a round of applause in the podcast, we're going to have a rounding, you know, cheering section now. Let's have a round of applause for your wife being pregnant.
Hey.
Yay. Well, I remember for the Forensics Forecast Awards last year, you guys had an entire pan of the audience where you guys do the show, right? And they're all cheering for you guys.
Yeah, that was our audience, yeah.
That was your audience. Where you're doing this, right? That's what I'm envisioning right now. Everyone's just listening in.
Oh, yeah. There's like a stadium full of people all listening to me now.
Right.
Absolutely. So, reason we got you back on, reason we had one originally last time was to talk up the SANS Summit, which took place in Washington, D.C., didn't it?
The U.S. Summit took place in Washington, D.C., yes. And this time, we had such a resounding success that we've decided to try this out in the European Union, starting in London this April with our first EU conference, EU-based forensics summit. I mean, and then one of the reasons for that, there's so many experts that live over in your area of the world that it only makes sense to make it a little bit easier for you to travel, and so you could get the word out and be able to share your experiences as well. And that's one of the reasons we invited you to show up at the summit and give a couple of presentations, I hope.
Yep, a couple. What?
you don't know about the other one?
Oh, no.
Actually, you're listed for a total of three. You don't know it yet, but you have the one you're giving. You have, I've asked you, I teased you with the thought of maybe we could do a forensics podcast live at the event.
Yep.
You know, potentially do some interviews with folks. That's number two. And number three is I currently have you slated to sit on a new forensics techniques panel because of some of your research that you're currently doing. I thought you would be a really good addition to give your thoughts of what other areas in Windows 7 and other technologies that need some additional focus that no one's done yet.
Okay. I'll bear that in mind.
if you're around, I mean, it just happens to be right after you talk, so I thought you might be.
Oh, yeah, that's not a problem. Not a problem. I'm happy to do whatever you need me to do.
Unless, of course, family calls and you need to go, right?
Oh, no. I mean, that's I'm hoping everything goes smoothly in that regard and that I won't need.
She's not going to be due around then, is she?
No, she's not due until the end of September, but. As I said, you know,
another round of applause right there. Woo!
You know, like I said, our last child was 3 months early, so I'm hoping that's not the case again. Far too scary.
I had a friend that had that happen too, and it was a lot of going in and out of the hospital for a good month and a half for them.
Oh, yeah, definitely. But yeah, I'm hoping that I remain undisturbed during that time. And I guess that one of the things I'm quite looking forward to this, because people know me for the podcast and stuff like that, which is all right. That was the idea of me doing the podcast to start with, that I get my name out there. But that's all I'm known for at the moment. You know what I mean? I want to be known for something else, which is why after talking to you, I really thought this would be a good idea to participate in.
Oh yeah, no, totally. That makes a lot of sense for a lot of reasons. And you're not the only one too. There's a lot of community over there, right? I think because of the even though a lot of people now are seeing that, at least from my opinion, the EU is one big. Every time you're talking anything Europe, it's now EU. But you know, even between the countries, there's really not as much cross-border discussions, or as much as we might think, because here in the U.S., you have the FBI kind of and the United States Secret Service and other federal cases that could go from country to country, where over there, it's a much different circumstance. And as a result, you have more, you have what's going on in the U.K., you have what's going on in Germany, you potentially might have, you know, Spain, but they could all be separate and everyone's doing their own thing, but there's not as much of a community focus as I think there is here in the United States. And I could be wrong. I mean, what do you think about that?
No, I think you're exactly right. I mean, we have like one big conference which happens in the UK every year, which is the F3 conference. It happens in November. And it gets a good turnout, but you find that that's all there is as you go throughout the year. And in terms of bringing all of Europe together, it doesn't happen at all.
Well, we're not going to probably say that we're going to be, you know, uniting Europe as a result of this small summit. But at least, you know, what I would like to do is get a lot of the experts that are doing work in the community, in the EU community especially, at least, you know, gives you a chance to meet the other individuals, from Eric Herrera to Andreas Schuster to other individuals who are going to be making appearances there. It's a great chance. And I know, thinking, you probably corresponded before, but like at the U.S. summit, one of the biggest benefits I thought was not, you know, it's great for the audience, but the speakers, to a certain extent, have only corresponded with each other in online forums or in mailing lists, and you actually get to sit down while drinking a beer, sit down and actually sit, really catch up and see what's going on in the community from both a panel perspective, but it also allows the individuals who come to the summit to sit down with you as well. One of the things that I find great about the summits, and you'll probably see this, that unlike a normal conference event in which you go and you usually take a training course or you're segmented off, and this is a very open forum where it's great for people who are just beginning, as well as all the way down to people who are experts in the field, because you're exposed to new cutting edge research, number one, but also you're allowed to participate from an audience perspective in panel discussions with experts, not just one, but four or five of them who are sitting up there will be able to give their views, and you're going to take part in that discussion. So instead of it being, the speaker's going to push everything to the audience is able to get their questions answered about what, types of things, from what their perspective is, and be able to get that interactivity. It's really exciting and something that's great to see. It's unlike anything that you've ever seen before at a normal conference, when you have that much involvement by the individuals. And usually, like, for example, whenever we have a panel happen, what I try to do is I have a breakout room set up. So if people want to go into that breakout room and continue the discussion, they're able to do so without impeding the overall summit schedule. Because sometimes people just, they're so focused in on a new topic that it's also good to be able to talk to you personally, one-on-one, to be able to talk about your views on things. Speaking of which, I have to ask you this. I've heard rumors that you're working on something special for the Forensic Summit. Is this true?
It is, but unfortunately, I can't take all of the credit myself. You see, this is the thing. Is that Mark McKinnon and I have gotten together. And
The Mark McKinnon.
The Mark McKinnon.
Mark Tool McKinnon.
He's going to hit me now.
If you look up the other one, if you've met Mark, which, and he's a big dude.
Yeah.
He and I together are the people you don't want to see in a boxing match.
But,
about the same size. Yeah, yeah, so Mark is working on this.
Yeah, we've been working together on something. We're hoping that we'll have something to show at the summit, but we're not.
Like chicken or something like that, or
like software. We're hoping to have some software.
Oh, software. Okay, that's right. It's like, you know, you're helping to something to show.
Right,
chicken,
okay.
You know, like something to show, but you actually might have some software to show.
Yeah,
okay.
Chickens would be interesting to bring to a forensic summit, but yeah.
But you never know. Some things have happened. You know, we can't talk about it. It's apparently been banned, but yeah. So let me. You're working on some secret sauce software that you can't tell us about.
Well, we're working on some proof of concept software that will allow people to dig into volume shadow copies a lot more easily than they currently have to do. So I'm hoping by that point that we've got something to show you. And I'm.
When you mean a lot more easily, does that mean that a person will be able to access from a raw image any file that's stored in any of the shadow copies?
That's the idea.
Oh, wow. Are you going to, is this going to be a free tool or something you're going to release that's going to be commercial? Do you know?
Oh, I see. That's what we have to try and figure out between now and the release.
I'll pay $10 for that.
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking London pounds then or UK pounds, then I'll only pay $5 because, you know, at that point, then it's going to be double. And last time I was in UK, by the way, I went and had like a couple drinks. And I was with my wife and we went up on top of this great view overlooking the river. And ordered two. Actually, we had some of our friends with us. We ordered four mojitos, and each of them were £2 a piece. I mean, no, excuse me, £10 a piece.
What?
And I sit there, and yeah, no. It was incredible. It was, I was floored when I saw the cost of these drinks. It's £10 per drink, and so in the back of my mind, I say, okay, so if I double that, then that's $20. I just pay $80 on drinks for four mojitos. Awesome. I'm currently not convincing anyone in the U.S. to travel to the U.K. for the summit, by the way.
You ever seen everybody in England that wonder why they look miserable all the time? That's the reason right there.
Well, everything else is exactly the same price except double. I mean, yeah. If I buy a beer, you know, it'd be like £4. Yeah, yeah. You know, for a beer. And, you know, over here, that'd be a really expensive beer, you know, like 12% alcohol. Well, that's like a Miller Lite, I think. So, anyways, you know what? But you know, when we have beer, we'll talk about that. I guess you're buying. So,
thank you.
So I want to go back. I'm very interested in you talking about your research and the tool. What and how is this tool going to be built? Is it based off some research that you're doing, or
yeah?
Because this is the first time I've heard about it. I just saw your abstract and it fascinated me. So I know it's. I'm actually kind of interviewing you now, but I'm interested a bit in this because I actually don't have anything to share other than the summit. So you actually have to share.
All right. Basically for like the last 10 months or something like that, I've been doing research on volume shadow copies, mostly in Windows Vista. I've dabbled with Windows 7, but not a great deal. And, I think I'm very, very close to be able to completely manually deconstruct the volume shadow copies and tell you exactly what data is held inside. Now, obviously, manually.
Are you going to release a white paper on that? Or
what I'm going to try and do is that I'm going to try and have a white paper or an article, essentially, published on Forensic Forecast that I'm going to try and time it for release just as I finish doing the presentation. So
you know something you could do, and I'm just going to offer this up, but that could also double as a way to get your GCFA gold certification doing that research.
I was talking to Mark McKinnon about this not only half an hour ago. So,
of course. he emailed me this morning talking about this gold paper as well, about ideas. And I was like, you know, maybe I should talk to Lee about doing, you know, doubling up. Because it's basically, if you're doing the research anyways, it essentially will potentially go ahead and do that. And you just have to format it and have a mentor and do a little bit of process. But other than that, it would be good recognition for the work you've done.
Yep. Oh, well, it's definitely something I'm considering. So I'll definitely bear that in mind.
And nothing precludes you from posting it anywhere else. I mean, it's your work.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
just get certification along with it, so which would be wonderful.
Yep. Yeah, well, it's definitely something I'm interested in doing, so we shall definitely see.
And we have, let's see, I don't know if you looked at the schedule or not, but we have Andreas talking about the new EBTX format, you know, talking about some of the event log parsing that he's currently doing, a lot of the work there, yep. Which I think is going to be kind of a fascinating thing. I have a lot to learn myself on that, especially the new format, because, you know, a lot of what we do is still based on XP and the older servers, 2003 and whatnot.
Yeah.
So, but again, that we're probably honestly within the last year and a half or so, to where we don't see a huge rollover to, I think, Windows 7 and the 2008 platforms.
Yeah. Now, well, I've part of my presentation, I've actually got like a little, I've already started my presentation, by the way, just so you know. Quite excited by it. But I've got a little chart that shows you the converging lines between Windows XP along the top and Windows Vista and Windows 7 along the bottom. And I'm predicting that somewhere around about July, April, that Windows XP will actually slide underneath and Vista and 7 will become the dominant Windows platforms.
I think Vista is going to be totally skipped though, don't you?
Well, I've had to add them together for the purpose of my presentation just because of they're both using the same technology, essentially.
Have you been able to tell if Volume Shadow is any different between Windows Vista and Windows 7?
They don't look as if they've changed. The only difference that I've been able to tell so far is that the amount of time between the snapshots. With Windows Vista, they do it every day. With Windows 7, it looks like they're going to do it weekly, so your chance of getting meaningful data back from it narrows slightly.
Isn't one also taken every time you reboot the machine?
Not every time.
Really? Okay,
yeah.
I thought I read somewhere it said it would do it every time.
It's one of the times when it will do it, and it. Yeah, well, let's see. Without trying to give away a huge amount of stuff here.
see, this is what I do. This is getting right, a conversation we're getting out right now. Everyone's just listening in to two people finding out how things work.
There's always a volume shadow copy open, ready to be written to, on Vista and 7. And that it looks as if that data gets pushed to that frequently, and when the computer shuts down, that's one of the times when a volume shadow copy will be created. But there's this massively stupid long algorithm which Microsoft have put into place that determines when a volume shadow copy will actually be created.
One of the things I found that is interesting, and you know, again, just from my observations on my own Windows 7 systems, because I really look at the shadow copy a lot. Do you think that potentially one of the ways it does this is by the total amount of data that is changed?
Yes.
Okay, because the reason I say that is I would notice on certain days, and usually there are high activity days, I would have three snapshots for that one day. And I would go back to that machine, I was like, I was really working a lot on that machine that day. A lot of files are being uploaded, downloaded, doing a lot. And I was wondering if it keeps track of the number of bytes being written to, and it reaches a threshold and kicks it off or something like that.
So I don't know about that now. That'd be interesting to find out. I know that whenever you install something, you'll definitely generate a new snapshot. So that might have something to do with it as well.
Also, I think it's the Chinese that are on my system, so they keep on installing new malware on my system. So.
You work for Google?
Yes. No, I I don't know. But I was wondering if it had something to do about thresholds, about total amount of percentage of the discs that have been changed. I don't know. I mean, just something that I was trying to figure out. I don't remember installing software at those points, but that could be. Hey, another question I was just thinking about. Within Windows 7, Windows Vista, they still have the system restore data compared to the Windows snapshot. And there's a fire engine going right by right now. So I'll ask the question again. They still have the system restore data, which is available to everything that, you know, for our home users all the way through up until you get to business, in which now you're, as once you reach business level, you're able to then do the revert back to previous snapshot. But I know all versions store this data, and you can still do a system restore, which will not revert the entire volume. Is that stored in a separate location like it is on XP? I mean, no one's ever parsed this like what you're doing. So I just know it's there. I just assume that it keeps track of, you know, marks those files as special files. But obviously there's something else that's keeping track of in Windows 7 installed programs, which I have not found yet.
That's what I'm trying to figure out at the moment.
So basically, I'm asking all the right questions then, right?
Yeah. The records in the volume shadow copy, I've been able to find three distinct kinds of record. And I'm trying to interpret exactly what each of those three mean at the moment. It appears as if sometimes it will do like the whole, because volume shadow copies are split up into 16 kilobyte sections. It appears as if sometimes it will write the whole 16 kilobyte block back on a restore, and sometimes it will just do a portion of the 16 kilobyte block.
Okay.
So my gut feeling is that whenever you install like a Windows update or something like that, that's all marked as a portion to write back if you need to revert. But I'm struggling to find proof of that at the moment. So this is where the interesting bit comes in. That's what I've been racking my brain the last couple of days. And while I find it very interesting, I also find it to be a real pain in the backside as well.
Well, yeah, so, I could imagine. Yeah, it seems to me that because it's still, if there's a system restore function that you could find, which I've tested that, it'll only go back and to one of the snapshots. So I know it's looking at the volume shadow.
Yeah.
And so it's like pulling the registry, you know, that data. But just like XP restore points, it must somehow also keep track in there of the installed programs. So it could pull those out as well. So I know both that functionality is still within it. So you're basically using the same, you know, concept, but it, you know, it has to be able to keep track or mark those files as special somehow, or keeping track of them somewhere else. It's something that, you know, obviously the data is there. We, you know, no one's done this. So I'm really excited to potentially see that if you can move the, you know, even if you're moving the ball 4 or 5 yards, you know, it's like, here's the entire dissection of the Windows volume shadow. So I don't want to set everyone's expectations to, you know, through the roof here, because this is extremely complicated. And if it's not, I'll eat my words later. But as far as I could tell, it looks very complicated. But, you know, even if we move the ball 4 or 5 yards and you have someone who says, here's where what we know up until now, that's 5 yards that we don't know. I mean, even Mark Rusanovich, you know, did you take a look at his latest book?
I can't say I have.
System Internals, the latest one came out. He only has like, you know, talks about the process around the shadow volumes, but it does not go into a dissection of it like it does for NCFS or other, you know, how does it actually store the data for it?
Yeah.
So, you know, again, we're pretty much flying blind here.
Oh, I can do that.
Been able to talk to any developers? Like, have you contacted Troy Larson?
I've sent Troy Larson. I've sent him an email telling him what I have, but unfortunately, this guy is so incredibly busy. He just doesn't have time. But he sent me an email back a while ago saying that he's tried everything he can think of to bribe the people, the team responsible for volume shadow copies. He's bribed them with disgusting amounts of alcohol and all kinds of stuff, apparently, but to no effect. So even to a fellow Microsoft employee, they're still not willing to share the information, so which is unfortunate.
Wow, that's scary enough, isn't it?
They may that's be willing cool. to talk to me after they see what I have, though.
That's I'm cool. Hoping. That's awesome. I'm really excited to see what you have, number one, and also number two, see if you and Mark have a potential tool release that would go along with it. At least a demo in a an environment that says, okay, here's what it's going to do. Well, you know, let's continue to work on it. Because it always, if you set something up saying we're going to release the tool tomorrow, it's almost like too much pressure in some cases versus here's conceptualization of what the tool is going to do. We have it to work in as one environment, but we know if it could work here, we could potentially figure out, you know, in a larger scale. So yeah,
the idea is to do a proof of concept.
That's the words I was looking for. Proof of concept.
Yeah. Yeah, proof of concept for the summit, but I also realize that Mark is extremely busy and he's got other things that he needs to do as well. So,
he likes cheeseburger bratwurst. I mean, of course. He tweeted about that once. He said, it's like he's talking about, he has to go, it's during the summer, Memorial Day, granted, it's going to be kind of, but he's like, yeah, I'm going to go cook some cheeseburger brats. I'm like, even if I wanted to go to the grocery store here in the U.S., in the Washington, D.C. area and say, I'm going to get some cheeseburger brats, I, for the life of me, would probably, I would lose that number one. And B, number two, people in every store probably have no idea what I'm talking about. So that's something pretty special that he has up there, if you're able to do cheeseburger brats. Some of the other presentations at the summit, by the way, we have Mateo Swish. And I think I have his name pronounced right. Mateo, if I'm incorrect, please let me know. But he's going to be presenting on his latest research on memory analysis and memory acquisition. And his claim is that Windows Blue Screen of Death is now over, is one of the presentations that he's doing. We have Jesse Kornblum is going to be coming, talking about the latest research on fuzzy hashing. That he's been doing, and he's going to be giving one of the keynotes. So I'm really excited to potentially, if I'm really thinking about it, I create these summits so I could learn, so I could sit down as part of the audience and sit there and listen to the latest and greatest information that, you know, people are researching, because this is stuff that, you know, doesn't appear in courses yet. There's no, because it's so brand new. It takes a couple of years before, you know, the technique is accepted, that everyone gets it and then, you know, finds its way into a potential course material. And, you know, so as a result, you know, what we talk about at these conferences end up being, you know, a lot of the cutting edge, you know, and plus we discuss a lot of the challenges and also answer a lot of questions, you know, from what the audience has, you know, what they think should be done as well. So it's a great environment for everyone. I'm just really excited to come over there. Number one, to, you know, come drink warm beer. Number two.
Expensive warm beer.
Expensive warm beer. we'll just, what you're buying. So it's good. He's like, oh yeah, that's great. honestly, the first couple rounds are going to be on me. Let's be honest. Because you're going to be giving your time up for coming to the summit. And I really appreciate that. So, definitely. So it's going to be a good time.
Yeah. I don't do nervous. But I'm nervous about this.
Wait, it's okay. You're about to become a dad again, and you're nervous about this. Okay.
this is what I tell people all the time. I like to take risks with stuff, and I'll quite frequently I'll set myself a target, and you know if I hit it, fantastic. And these targets will always be very, very difficult to do. If I hit the target, fantastic. If I don't hit the target, well, you know, it's unfortunate, and some people might laugh at me for it, but in the end, I think I probably will have accomplished a lot more by missing the target than not trying at all. So,
you have to try. I mean, you know, the funny thing is, especially in presentations, invariably what happens, and you've even seen this happen in Microsoft, is where, you know, like the blue screen of death that happens during those presentations, Steve Ballmer. So, you know, half the time I'm working on I think I was doing multiple demos for Blind Shadow, just the concept of it, even how to access it and image it and in the course. And of course, when I'm demoing this, something will always fail. And everyone in the class, I'm saying, no, really, this works. And I think, you know, one of the things is, and I found this to be true, especially for forensic techniques, that you do it, you know, 10 times on the same system, it's fine. But for some odd reason, as soon as you pass like 100, because it's the same demo system that you're using for the demo, that the machine finally says, okay, you know, you're really not supposed to be doing this. And so I'm just not going to allow you to do this anymore. And it'll just stop. It won't tell you. There's no error. It just says, no, you know, something, you know, just wrong. And it will not work. And then, sure enough, everyone, like ask everyone now, it's okay, everyone else try this. Is it working in your systems? And they all sit there and nod and say yes, and it's working great. And my system up in the front, I'm the only one with the bug. It's incredible. And of course, you get frustrated to the point where you reinstall your machine and everything works again. Like I was joking earlier, it's probably the Chinese. It's doing something on my box, but at this point, because I have, you know, all those secret files that they want. So.
Oh yeah. No. I've been looking at presentation skills and stuff, and I've decided that I'm definitely going to go down the Steve Jobs route rather than the Steve Ballmer route. I don't think people will get too much out of me jumping around the stage going, woo!
Few seconds. How's it going to go again? Yeah. You're supposed to go, developers. I don't know if you've seen the YouTube video, you know, that couple that got married and they danced down the aisle.
No.
You haven't seen this? Okay, well, I guess what your wife would love it. Let's just put it that way. My wife, you know, seen this. It was on the U.S. version of The Office. They did a snapshot of it. And my joke, what I was going to do, but you won't get it now, is that you could you and half the audience could dance down the center of the conference area and you know, for your presentation on Volume Shadows, and we could play the same music. But I'll now have to send you this link and actually have to add it to your show notes so the listeners will know what the hell I'm talking about. Oh, good times. Glad it when a joke just fails like that. That's great. All good.
Yeah, well, I think that last time you were on with the Mark McKinnon, the tool, I think that seems to have stuck quite well over the last few months.
Mark's a great guy. We hung out at the DoD Cybercrime Conference in St. Louis this past year, in January, actually, past month in January. And it was good to see him. That's when he was shoulder surfing, lifting my password from me, for my system as I was typing it in. So good times. And, of course, do you remember what my password was?
Do I remember what it was?
Yeah, because I tweeted it.
Oh, I don't remember. I remember seeing
it. My password was Mark McKinnon is my favorite tool. because he tweeted right before that, he said, I'm currently shoulder surfing, because he knew I was watching tweets. He said, I'm currently shoulder surfing Rob Lee typing passwords into his machine. And I said, well, then you should have picked up on that. That my password is Mark McKinnon is my favorite tool. Anyways, Twitter fun, hilarity ensues. So, I'm just curious, you know, what's the future of the Forensics Forecast show then? Are you going to come back to it or?
Yeah, definitely going to come back to it. It's going to be probably at least another month or so until I'm ready to do that again. But I think that things are going to change slightly.
Here's one way to solve both problems, by the way. Yep. Do a next episode of the show and do something like really excitingly important, some, you know, major announcement that, you know, you think the people are listening and can only find out by listening to the show. And then what you do is you embed the show into a Volume Shadow copy, snapshot, And you tell them that in order to listen to the show, they have to recover it and tell you how they recovered it. And then you release a DD image, you know, with it, you know, not in the regular, it's like at least one or two snapshots behind. Then you get your research done for you. And the major announcement is, you know, something like, you know, the baby's name is, you know, Rob Lee or something like that, you know. That's my major announcement. You know, then you get your research done for you and you can do more shows. I think it's perfect.
It's got legs. It's got legs. But, yeah, I think I'm going to have to start doing something soon because everyone keeps harassing me about when the next Forensic Forecast Awards will take place and the like as well. So,
yeah, you're doing all this on top of your regular job, right?
Yeah.
What is your regular job?
I've forgotten, to be honest. No, it's I do forensic investigations for police contracts in over here. So that's what I do during the day, and at night I come home and work on volume shadow copies at the moment. So and help my wife. I help my wife first, then I do volume shadow copies.
Nice, good save. She's, you know, she probably does. She listen to every podcast that you do?
No, she doesn't even listen to it.
All right.
We actually have another podcast which we do now as well, which is a comedy podcast which she actually does with me now. So
really?
that keeps her involved.
What's can anyone listen?
Yeah, anyone can listen to it. Yeah, it's a bot. It's AB0RT.
Oh, that's right. I remember you talking about this. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I have not listened to it yet. Fail for me. But that's great. It's great that you're doing that.
Yeah. So it's.
Listen to one webcast that I did once, and it was like simulcast, and she, you know, bless her heart, she decided to put it on while she was working in her office, and she had her speakers turned up, and, you know, it was during a time I kept on, you know, saying, well, make sure at this point that you insert your dongle, and I kept on referring back to a dongle. Now, you and I hear that, and you think we know exactly what we're talking about, and we forget how ridiculous that sounds. To anyone who's not in the community. And of course, I said it, and then everyone in her office started like coming up around her PC. And she's like, did he really just say dongle? So you had all these people where she works all standing around her. So, and then she was never let up on that. She's like, at least I don't use dongle in an actual sentence. And so... all good. I'm really looking forward to the EU Forensic Summit. And if any of the listeners, what I'm going to try and do is I'm going to get a discount code created for you to post with your show. So I don't know what it is right now, but I'll get it posted to the show notes. It's going to be April 19th and 20th of this year in... and it's going to be in London, and we actually have the hotel. It's at the Millennium Gloucester Hotel and Conference Center in London, which is in Harrington Garden, 418 Harrington Gardens. I'm not sure exactly where that is, but sounds like a pretty cool place. I'm looking at the website right now, and it looks like nice digs. But that's where the summit's going to be held. And of course, we're doing pre-conference training. It's the first time over in the EU or even in the UK that we're doing our new course, Computer Forensics Essentials, which is Forensics 408, which we're going to be doing that for our pre-conference training, which is the 14th through the 18th of April.
Okay. Have you got training courses afterwards as well?
Or is it just before? We do not. We just had before. Okay. I know Andrew Smith, who runs the EU side for SANS, has coming up a little bit later on in Amsterdam. He's doing both 408 and 508, which is forensics essentials, more, you know, focused on traditional criminal forensics regarding a computer system. Then forensics 508 is starting to really focus in on
intrusion-related forensics hackers, advanced insiders who really know what they're doing. Like, you know, for example, you would know enough to probably really make your life more difficult for forensics. But the average person, you know, can be probably solved by going to 408. More of the advanced stuff is going to be sitting in forensics 508 now. And we're starting to see a lot more of the need for having a new breed of forensicator to be able to handle really difficult and challenging cases. I always kind of make fun of the situation, but in a lot of organizations, if you ask, well, how do you, you know, if an alert happens on a system and you go over to the machine, you're going to check it out and you have kind of like live response scripts, how do you verify if that machine's been compromised or not? And invariably, you know, one of the individuals will come back and say, well, I look at a process list and I look for anomalous processes. And normally, to most individuals, that sounds like a very decent thing to do. But for anyone who's actually done that, they just described the hardest thing possibly you could ever want to ever have to face when you're doing computer forensics or incident response is figuring out which process is a bad process. Huh. Very difficult, challenging prospect. And it's not just going to be, you know, there's going to be some process on there called evilmalware.exe currently running as a service on the machine. And, you know, finding injected programs, even programs that have been patched, you know, stuff that's memory only, it's difficult now. And, it, you know, what about dormant malware? Nothing that's not even running on a machine.
Yeah.
You just know that something's sitting there. How do you find it? You know, most people forget that, you know, you have on average 50 to 100,000 files on your average Windows machine. So how do you actually go through each one of those files, potentially looking for one that is bad? I mean, because they're not being hidden by rootkits. I mean, that's essentially what we're starting to do in 508, which is a computer forensics investigations and incident response, really starting to toe the line of teaching people how to respond to that type of situation more. You know, live response, being able to find evil sitting on a machine and be able to examine it as quick as possible to be able to get answers. And that's a much different style case than if someone's saying, I'm looking for intellectual property theft. And so we're really starting to create a track for people to follow through. So what we always tell people to do is go take in 408 first. Now, the funny thing is we've created, because a lot of people think, well, I don't want to go take what is essentially the first course. We've created an assessment that is posted online now. If you go to the Computer Forensics site, and I'll send you the link if you want to post it with your show notes as well.
Okay.
The assessments, I think, is a good test overall, just to say how, you know, how decent is your forensic knowledge. But it will rate you based off how well, you know, we take a little bit of snippets. So it's not like a full certification, but the assessment is fairly challenging, and it will tell you which course you potentially need to take, whether you know enough to say you don't need to attend 408, which is our forensic essentials course, versus are you ready to take 508. Some people know more of the incident response material than they do of traditional forensic information. For example, how to correctly parse a USB device or registry keys such as user assist in the prefetch. All that is what we consider essential material, whereas you know, doing memory analysis, looking for rogue processes, that's something that we're considering more of the incident response material that is now found in the new 508 course. So That type of stuff is, you know, what the assessment is meant to assess. So some people who are really good on the incident response stuff go back to the earlier course to be able to brush up their knowledge on everything else.
Excellent. And, of course, both the 408 and 508, you take both of those and you're in a prime position, assuming you've been listening, to go for the GIAC Certified Forensic Analyst.
Yes,
certification,
yes,
as well. And just recently there was some news about that as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, the forensics analysis GCFA, the GIAC Certified Forensic Analyst, it's a mouthful, has recently been approved and accredited itself. So the certification has been certified, which is a measure of not just, you know, are you able to assure that Lee, you took the test, and only you. They had to do two forms of ID, and you had to go. You just got certified yourself, right?
I did, yeah.
Yeah, you had to go through. You know, tell people. Can you tell people kind of what you went through when you went into to take the test? What did you have to go through? Didn't take it from home, right?
No. I had to go to a professional testing center where they asked for two forms of identification.
Right.
And then
what could you bring in with you other than your body?
Oh, I had the manuals available as well.
Right. You couldn't bring a computer. It's not networked. No Google.
Oh, no. You've got the course manuals for 508, and I think that's the only reference material you're allowed to have.
Right.
But, yeah, no internet connection, nothing for risk of being out.
So that's one portion of the accreditation is that you have secure testing facilities. The organization itself that does the certification is its own center. It's its own company, essentially. That is, while it's associated with SANS, it's not SANS. Yeah. It's GIAC. That's number two. And, it's surprisingly enough to be able to get that to happen. An organization really has to struggle to be able to, make sure that there's some clear brick walls between both organizations. And the final thing, and this is probably the most important, especially for you and I, is that the test has actually gone through a study. And they call it a psychometric study, number one, that not everyone can pass this test. It's not a 100% pass rate. That this, based off the psychometrics that they do, they test for how often you use a skill, how critical is that skill, and how frequent do you have to do that. And so based off of anything that rates the highest in all three of those categories, that is what is going to be tested the most versus things that are, it's a critical skill, but you don't do it as frequent. Or it's non-critical, non-frequent, and, it's rated low on all three. So as a result, that you're only may see one question on that. So the actual test itself has gone through this study, and the entire, I actually have a common body of knowledge that was published back in 2008 when it's taken 2 years to get the accreditation, that we sit through about 50 different experts saying, what are we missing? And we based off our test and our material off of that common body of knowledge that we sent out to all these different experts. And we're talking some of the best people in the field, not even associated with SANS,
yeah,
to say, take a look at this and give us some feedback here. And we adjusted a little back then to be able to make sure that the test is going to be as robust as possible. But and then that once the psychometrics are done, we had people rate each of the common body of knowledge based off of those psychometrics. So you would have, a massive, almost 200 people who looked at the common body of knowledge and rated it based off of those three factors. Okay, so, like drive imaging, you would have it's critical, frequent, but how difficult is it? Well, it's not that difficult, so it'd be easy. So you have, that is going to be rated for all three of those areas. And that's how the test questions, when they're created, the focus areas, how often the question is going to be asked is all based off of those factors. That's how, and then ANSI comes back and looks at the end report of this based on graphs and statistics, will look at to make sure that GIAC had done this properly and then gives it its stamp of approval. That took in itself a good 6 months to accomplish.
Oh, yeah.
Just for ANSI to come back and say, you guys are good. And it's not just ANSI, it's ISO and several other organizations have all do personal certification accreditation. That's why you see all these numbers, 17024 and ANSI, it's all combined. But GCFA is currently the only vendor-neutral certification out there. Doesn't mean it's better than anyone else's. In fact, there's a lot of good ones out there. I love the CCE, the ISFCE folks and what they've done there. So some really good stuff out there in the community. We've chosen this path, though, for our stuff, mainly for we have a lot of requests from the UK government as well as here in the States, that in order for their own government personnel that they're hiring, that they have some sort of accredited exam that they go through. And for example, CISSP is also another example of an ANSI accredited certification,
yeah,
for personal certification. So that's the level we're trying to attain here.
Yep. I think it's superb, personally. I think it's what everyone should be striving for, is a certified certification. So
there's one other thing I'd like to tell you, though. Okay. I have an announcement. I kind of leaked it the other day on Twitter. I don't know if you saw it or not.
I've not been on Twitter very much recently, I have to admit.
See, there you go. the SIFT workstation 2.0 is going to be released.
I did see that, actually, yeah.
In the next 2 weeks. It's going through some testing right now. Some people are taking a look at it, making sure it's working properly. But I've completely rebuilt it. It's based on Ubuntu at this point, which make it a lot easier for people to use and keep updated. Plus, I asked out there about 20 different people. I said, "What is your favorite distro?" And pretty much, it was almost like 80% of them said they wanted Ubuntu. So that's what I based it off. And pretty much have everything else out there. And I did a lot of requests online for what was missing from it and what they wanted to see in it. And I think I have almost everything added that people have requested. And so I think we'll have hopefully a good free product out there that people can use for doing a lot of different casework.
Do you have a specific target date for that, or is it just sometime in the next couple of weeks?
Same thing with Volume Shadow. When I get home from work and I'm working on it, I can't predict when I'm going to find a bug. I can't predict if I'm pretty close. And if it's out to testing right now, it means that I got all the bugs out. I'm just making sure that everyone else doesn't find their own. And so that's what we're currently doing with it. And once that's done, then we'll have it uploaded and downloadable. I might not make an announcement for it initially. So you have to go out to computerforensics.sams.org and look for it. The reason why not an announcement is we don't want to get, since it's a large file, we do not want to get deluged with hits. So I'm kind of making these soft announcements like through your show so people start looking out for it.
Yeah.
And as people start downloading it, we'll probably mention it in a couple places and then do a major announcement, hey, SIFT Workstation 2.0 released, maybe about 2 weeks after it's actually been released, in order to make sure there's not a massive spike hitting the machines, because I guarantee they'll take it offline if you have 200 people downloading a 2 gig file. I'm almost positive that would create them to say, "Oh, that's too much bandwidth," and they'll throttle it back to maybe, like 5 simultaneous downloads at once. Right now it's manageable, but the last time we did a release, it spiked it and it ended up taking about a week to where it was back down to normal bandwidth levels.
Good stuff. Obviously, I could be completely ignorant about all this. Have you thought about distributing it over something like BitTorrent?
I brought that up and they said no.
Fair enough then.
I did mention that, and they and we all know who they are. They're always the people that tell us no, but they said no.
That's a fair enough.
All right.
Cool. All right. Well, I know you're a very busy man, especially today. So I shall let you get on with the rest of your day. And
well, you too. You have a lot of work to do before April, by the way.
Yeah. But we'll have a talk offline about this panel as well.
Right. It's very little work. We just need you to show up and speak and talk about things.
Okay.
So it's not less of a presentation, but it's more of getting experts up there on the panel to be able to all brainstorm questions. And also, there'll be questions that I'll have and others will have that we'll be interested in seeing what the differences and answers would be. That's it.
Cool stuff.
It's easy.
All right.
I want to throw your name into, and unless it's something I knew you would probably accept, but I could be wrong.
No. Happy to do whatever. All right. Well, thanks for joining us again, and we'll look forward to next time we have you back.
No, I really appreciate it, Lee, and thanks for having me on the show again.
Okay.
And good luck with your research.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so one more thing before we go is that this isn't the only podcast that I do anymore. We've also got another podcast, which both my wife and I do on a weekly basis, called Abort. And we just want you guys to go check it out and see what you think. The address for that is www.abort.com. You can also find it on iTunes. You can find it on Facebook. Find us on Twitter even. But yeah, give it a shout. Give it a listen to and see what you think. Comments are welcome. And we'll have an episode of Forensic Forecast again for you very, very soon. Bye.